Hey, this is Tom Webster, and this is Sounds Profitable for Tuesday, November 1st, 2022, Radio's 7 Warnings for the Podcast Industry, Part 1. Podcasting has seen its share of bad press over the past couple of months, but I've seen this movie before in the radio industry. So this week, I'm kicking off a 2-part series on the lessons that podcasting can take from radio's struggles. First, though, this week on Sounds Profitable Ad Tech Applied, is it time to rethink promo codes? Join Ariel Nissenblatt, Brian Barletta, and me as we discuss the impact of the humble promo code, its utility, its use, and propose a change that would make them more impactful for listeners, publishers, and advertisers. So I sat down to write this podcast a while back, and when I picked up my head, I had over 4,700 words, and that would indeed make for a very scary just post-Halloween edition of Sounds Profitable. So I decided to give you all a break and split this into 2 parts, and I hope you enjoy part one. Part two will air next week. So as long as you're subscribing or following our channel, our feed, you will have it deposited in your lap. Podcasting has had a bad couple of months in the press lately, from the podcast movement Ben Shapiro kerfuffle to layoffs at Spotify and Acast, iHeart's dalliance with Subway Surfer, which Brian wrote about last week, Vulture claiming that podcasting doesn't produce blockbuster hits anymore, and on and on and on. Truly a rich pageant. Now, it's worth remembering a few things about all of this. First of all, there's a wealth of information out there that tells the positive story of podcasting, from the Super Listeners research series that I once worked on at Edison, to our own studies here at Sounds Profitable, like After These Messages, and we'll be right back. Yeah, podcasting is just as susceptible to criticism as any other medium, and the fact that we're currently weathering some of that, it just means that podcasting is starting to punch at its weight class after years of toiling away as an experimental spin for advertisers. It's also worth telling yourselves in these low moments that the seeming torrent of criticism podcasting has been enduring lately is coming through other media channels, which are themselves facing some pretty rough waters, right? I mean, let's really compare how much of the professional podcasting space is cutting headcount compared to digital or radio. So turn that frown upside down, podcasters. The reason I continue to be so bullish about podcasting is that I've seen this movie before. Podcasting is not that much different to any other audience-driven media, and so luckily for us, we have plenty of examples from the past from which to learn so that we can not only survive but thrive during this seeming economic downturn everyone keeps telling us we're having. One of the biggest reasons I got into podcasting was, perversely, my love of radio. To me, podcasting was not a medium of the future, but it was one firmly rooted in the past. It was what radio used to be and what radio lost along the way. When I pushed Edison Research to include podcasting on the Infinite Dial series back in 2006, I wasn't interested in RSS. I wasn't interested in any one particular podcast over another. I had some favorites. I did it because I believed that the behavior podcasting enabled, the ability to listen to truly interesting spoken word content wherever and whenever you wanted, was truly universal, and I wanted to chronicle that from the beginning. Now, today, podcasting is a vibrant and interesting space, regardless of what Vulture writes about it. But radio, well, commercial radio is steadily declining. And that's not me telling you this, that's Nielsen telling you this. Lost in the incessant march of monthly and quarterly share ratings from Nielsen is the hard truth that time spent listening to radio has dropped precipitously over the last 10 or so years. Indeed, Edison's share of ear data shows that radio's share of our audio time has declined from 52% in 2014 to about 38% today, with streaming music and podcasting surging to claim that time that radio has ceded. With total time spent listening to audio remaining fairly constant over that period of time, that's a 27% decline in 8 years, and I think you'd feel that in your household budget. Edison also just put out a stat that showed podcasting has surpassed AM/FM radio in the overall share of personality or talk audio. And to be honest, I wouldn't get too wrapped up in the 2022 snapshot data on this one, which is it's a little bit messy, to be honest. After all, among the top 50 podcasts are such on-demand stalwarts as This American Life, Fresh Air, Ben Shapiro, Dan Bongino, Dave Ramsey, The Breakfast Club, The Sharp-Eyed, and Sharp-Eared will have detected what they all have in common. They're all AM/FM content, which means that the share of ear survey is reliant on the respondent to decide if they were listening to, quote unquote, the radio or to a podcast. But still, it's the trend that cannot be ignored here. Spoken word is moving away from the radio, and it's moving towards the mobile phone and to podcasting, which I spoke about a few podcasts ago. I think the podcasting industry has a lot to learn from radio, but it's not what many in the radio industry think, especially the commercial broadcast radio industry. I hear a lot of longtime commercial broadcasters talking about what they have to teach podcasters. But as my former grad school English department intramural basketball teammate, the poet Bruce Weigel, once wrote, "Sometimes what we pass on is not a gift." Radio has given us many wonderful, positive examples that translate and have translated well to podcasting. But radio is not just an example for podcasting. It's also, in some cases, a horrible warning. The past couple of months has seen some critical press for podcasting, from buying downloads through mobile gaming ads to insinuations that the industry can't build any more blockbusters and even layoffs. Now, most of this press I disregard. I'd rather be in podcasting than in ad-supported web content right now, that's for sure, at least until we come up with the audio flyover and the audio equivalent of the accept cookies overlay. But some of the criticism is also enormously valuable because it does hint at some choices this industry is making and choices it could make in the future that represent forks in the road. I'm no Nostradamus, but I have lived through the radio industry making some of those same choices, and I've seen how they've worked out. Spoiler alert. Not well. At least for commercial broadcast radio. Now, I want to share with you some of these horrible warnings and thoughts on how to avoid them. We're clearly headed towards some kind of economic correction, let's say, and there's no reason why a clear-headed podcasting industry won't weather this better than any other medium. So let's go. Number one, painting with the same brush. Beginning with my absolute favorite, let me bore you for hours at the cocktail reception topic, the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Elements of the commercial radio industry have been biting off more than they can chew financially for a quarter of a century. The largest radio companies in America have They really became the largest through a feverish period of acquisitions, which certainly gave them leverage in every sense of the word. The resultant debt that this literal handful of companies had to service became untenable and led to several Chapter 11 restructurings. iHeart, for instance, was recently able to restructure over $16 billion in debt to about $6 billion in debt a few years ago. Now, that's still $6 billion in debt, which if you laid every dollar end to end, it would stretch to the moon, I think, or to Mars, I think. I don't know. I didn't study astrology. The constraints that this amount of debt placed on these largest operators in radio led to years of layoffs, budget cuts, more layoffs, and otherwise just bad news. But here's the thing. While the largest operators were burdened by crushing debt service, there were plenty of smaller groups and locally owned stations that were doing just fine. Radio continues to throw off huge amounts of cash flow. It may be down, but it didn't crater like the classifieds business did. People still listen to the radio. Lots of people still love radio. But the very public struggles of a few operators painted the entire industry with the same brush. And that's a fact I know was very frustrating to any number of radio operators all across the country. We need to be vigilant about this in the podcasting industry. The signs are all around us. Ashley Carman's recent Bloomberg piece, "Podcasters are buying millions of listeners through mobile game ads," was an enormously helpful piece of journalism for our industry. We need to be ever vigilant to things like this, because we don't have the same margin of error that web and radio and TV currently enjoy. I mean, what percentage of web clicks do people simply just write off at this point? If there was one thing, though, that I wish were different about this article, it's the word podcasters in the headline. It wasn't podcasters that were buying millions of listeners. It was iHeart that was buying millions of listeners. There were two other significantly smaller players named in this Carmen piece, but their footprint was certainly not in the millions of listeners. In circumstances like this, yeah, we can call out the unhelpful actors in the space, but even better is to continue to raise our standards for measurement and transparency so that literally gaming the system isn't possible. Now, the system in this case is PodTrack, and it isn't the first time that iHeart has been observed engaging in activity that juices their rankings there. They were once observed having web page preloads count as downloads, a thing that PodTrack later fixed. Now, I've already written at length about some of the issues with prefix analytics, such as PodTrack, in podcasting. iHeart traffics on this particular ranking to proclaim itself the number one network in podcasting. Now, it's clearly not. It's well behind SXM and Spotify. It's bunched in a second tier as far as networks go. So one of the levers that we can pull to avoid as an industry being painted with the same brush is to also hold the system accountable with more stringent standards and more transparency. As the Mandalorian would tell us, this is the way. When we see things like this, as an industry, we need to call them out and sharply correct the record. I think the same is true when pundits attempt to conflate one company's unfortunate round of layoffs with some kind of structural weakness in the entire podcasting industry. The brave persons doing sterling service for Spotify's podcasting division are surely not the reason why Spotify has not been profitable for, 65 quarters now. When there are systemic problems in podcasting, you can expect Sounds Profitable to be at the forefront of trying to solve them. But you can also expect us to be a voice against painting us all with the same brush when it isn't warranted, because I've seen firsthand what it can do to an entire industry. Number two, please, don't destroy us with ads. I don't need to say a lot about this one, I hope. One of the primary reasons commercial AM/FM content has been unsuccessful online is that the online streams of broadcast radio stations carry the same crippling, nonsensical ad loads as their over-the-air counterparts. These simulcast streams aren't competing with other radio stations, right? They're competing with programming that's either ad-free, like Spotify Premium, or ad-spartan, like Pandora's free service. Last weekend, I gave one of the ad-supported Sonos stations a try, and I was horrified to hear 2 8-unit blocks of ads just 20 minutes apart. And that's just not going to fly in 2022. In fact, it hasn't flown in a long time. Spot loads are hands down one of the biggest problems in commercial broadcast radio. The current ratings methodology for radio, which is from Nielsen, awards a station an entire quarter hour of listening, 15 minutes, if a respondent listens for 5 minutes of that quarter hour. That means, by the way, you could listen to Hotel California and then check out for 10 minutes of ads, just not listen. But the ratings will report you as having listened for that entire time for 15 minutes. Truly, you can check out most anytime you want, but you can never leave. Now, this low-resolution rating methodology means that radio hasn't had to right its ship in terms of spot loads. If ratings were reported second to second, which they could be, well, radio shows would find religion on this issue right quick. But it isn't, and they haven't. In podcasting, though, we do have that kind of granularity, which means we aren't going to get away with long spot blocks, and we aren't going to get away with crappy ads, and we aren't going to get away with running the same digital ads inserted 3 or 4 times in an episode, and we're not going to get away with crap. I am not necessarily one of those that thinks of podcasting as some kind of pristine special snowflake that must not be sullied with something so crass as an announcer-read ad. In fact, we've taken great pains in some of our recent research after these messages, in fact, to show that there are multiple paths to the creative execution of successful podcast ads. But we're not measured like radio, and we can't act like radio or take advice from radio about spot loads. Podcasting's metrics are way better than those in the radio industry, and our listeners have millions of other choices available to them just a phone's length away. And number three, don't neglect the farm team. One of the unpleasant byproducts of the financial distress that some of the largest radio groups have grappled with over the last decade has been the disappearance of local DJs. It started with overnight jocks being replaced by automation, and then the voice tracking of other shifts by personalities in other markets handling those duties for multiple stations. And finally, in many markets, the local morning shows being replaced by Ryan Seacrest or one of a handful of syndicated shows from larger markets. This, as it turned out, was a doubly devastating move by the radio giants. In the present moment, it made those stations a lot less personable, a lot less engaging, and certainly less local. But it also cut the entire industry at the hamstrings because it eliminated radio's pathways for future talent. Pre-consolidation, the lively overnight jock had the opportunity to get better and eventually get a midday shift before maybe being noticed by another station in another market. They had the ability to work at their craft and get better, ensuring that radio always had a pipeline for talent. It was this system that allowed a jock at WIXZ in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, who called himself Bachelor Jeff, to move from middays to morning drive before moving on to stations in Pittsburgh and Kansas City and Sacramento, before finally being recruited by ABC Radio Network to have his own nationally syndicated show. This is how Rush Limbaugh became Rush Limbaugh. And whether you love his politics or hate them, Rush Limbaugh became an outstanding broadcaster because he had a path to get better and to get discovered. With the elimination of all the kinds of local positions that Limbaugh was able to hop around in as Bachelor Jeff and then Rush, there's no farm team for radio, there's no AAA club, and there's no path to discover new talent. Instead, radio has necessarily become incredibly risk-averse. When you need one talent to fill the morning show in 50 markets, you aren't going to take many chances. Talent development is something I know the biggest podcast networks think about, but many of them think about it in terms of acquisitions. But we also need to find ways to cultivate podcasting's farm team, the talent that isn't quite there for a million download show yet. But you can see it happening with the right tutelage. I think it's important for any publisher to think about developing not just new shows, but new podcasters. It's expensive to buy the Joe Rogans. It's rewarding to find the next Bachelor Jeffs. You want a head start? All of those people recently let go by Spotify and Acast and Warner should not remain unemployed for a single day. So wrapping up, that's three down and four to go. I trust you have been delivered to the end of this podcast in reasonably good condition, as I have spared you my entire 4,700-word outburst. And I hope you'll join me next week for part two of this. Part two, we'll dive more into content, changing demographics, and something that radio used to do very well that could make all the difference for podcasting. I'm Tom Webster. Thanks again for listening to this podcast, Radio's 7 Warnings for the Podcast Industry, Part 1. I'll be back with Part 2 next week. This episode was built using Spooler and hosted on Omni Studio by Triton Digital. Thanks for listening.